From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Jackie Vakes is out of the office this afternoon. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with Todd Hubbs and what he thinks about pricing soybeans. He says the potential is limited. The upside potential, again, is limited. We'll hear more from him. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Wednesday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is now here. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike, and thanks for filling in. Jackie Vakes out of the office today, and I guess you'll be out of the office Friday, so kind of a swap out.
Worked out great. It was awful nice to have Jackie do that. Nice to be with you on this midweek, Todd.
Well, we appreciate that much from you as well. So let's talk a little bit about the marketplace. We've had a pretty decent rally in soybeans. They maintained part of the gains that happened on Monday. What do we see from the Western Corn Belt as it relates to damage in the soybean crop? Have they begun to harvest again yet in that particular crop? Or are they still stuck in corn and waiting for conditions to dry out?
There are some beans being cut in Nebraska. Haven't talked to any fellows around here. I think we're probably still about a day out because we, you know, we dealt with 9 to 10 inches of rain. So I'd say we're probably a day out at least. Temperatures are warming up. But yeah, Nebraska clients are running. They do see probably 3, maybe 5 bushel losses due to the weather in and of itself. It's early on. The Minnesota clients that I work with, they started back up again. They haven't given much information, much feedback yet. They've had a really tough go of it this year. And Northern Iowa people as well, they started out really, really good, really solid harvest pace. But now they've really been digging in their heels and having to deal with a lot of frustrations. I think all of them, of all the people I've talked to late last week and early this week, especially those that are running again west of the Mississippi, are really nervous that they're not going to get much done after October because of this weather pattern. And you could see maybe they have some validity in that, Todd, because the beans certainly traded better than what they did in the Globex overnight trade from last night. I think in large part because the models are starting to get a little bit wetter after this weekend.
So two things happening, maybe a 5 to 7, maybe as much as 10% yield hit, at least early on. I don't know whether to get there in total or not for parts of those areas. It sounds like that's what it is, and I think I've heard that from other places as well. And then they get stalled, and if they get stalled, they won't get to the beans at all.
That's it. I mean, that's where they lay down. That's where you have natural shatter and you have growth on the actual pods. No, I think the market's already on this. I mean, when they saw the crop progress numbers and saw that we were still behind last year, given the pace we were at on Monday, I think that that's a big reason why the meal and the beans have been able to hold up better and actually lead the whole grain complex and support it to the upside. I actually think that some in Chicago are starting to talk about a 3 bushel cut from the national yield that will be moving back towards 50 bushels. And if we did that, you'd take about 265 million bushels off carryover, and that would put you at about a 620, 630 carryover. And using one of my elasticity stats and sheets that I use for analysis, that would probably suggest that lead month beans could get up closer to 9.25. And that would be something to be really watching for here in the next few days.
Yeah, but as it stands today, we're at 885 million bushels, and that's just a big number.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that happened today that's something to watch out between now and the end of the week is we hit major resistance on the meal and major support on the dollar. It seems like there's kind of a confluence coming together in some of these arbitrary outside markets, inside markets, as far as the charts. That 327.50 area in the meal is a major resistance. It's the 50-month moving average at 525 level in the wheat. That's the 200-month moving average. And then you just tested for a fifth day in the row the dollar index trading the 100-day moving average just around 95 even. But we saw much bigger build in crude oil, ethanol supplies, along with Federal Reserve minutes, turn that dollar higher. And so we'll have to be watching very carefully here. If we fail in taking out support in the dollar and taking out resistance in the meal and the wheat, since they're our leaders, is that put in jeopardy, that 9.25 price objective in the beans?
Yeah, tapping on the top end and seeing whether it can push through. So we'll have to wait and see on it. How about corn? What's your thought there?
I think it's solid from a standpoint of a pullback being maybe 10 or 15 cents deep. I have a lot more clients than I did a month ago wanting to buy back into the corn at this stage of the game. So it kind of tells me that they sold well early, and they also probably didn't get the yields that they thought they would, and they want to get some reownership back on the books. So I feel still pretty solid about corn because the demand is there. One thing that, you know, is going to be real interesting, I think, just breaking through the news wires this afternoon, is the Russian production for wheat was lowered by the USDA Ag Attaché from 70 million tons to 68.5. You know, we need the wheat to find support before the corn really wants to go up, at least until we get 60% or more harvested in the corn, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I suppose one other supporting factor there might be the drought that continues in Western Europe and Russia both as they went into their planting season for the fall.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that's really going to help lift the world market price. The question is, do we erase some of that because of the strengthening dollar and the weakening euro? The Brexit stuff, the midterm elections, the fact that we just heard that maybe the trade deal with the United States and the European Union that was done back in July on a handshake may be susceptible to being fought out now between Wilbur Ross and the trade minister over in the EU. You're going to get a lot of geopolitics here in the next 3 weeks. It's really going to play havoc in the currencies, I'm afraid.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Actually, you'll keep an eye on it. I'll ask about it. How about that?
That sounds great.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for being
with us
today.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, let's start with African swine fever. It's been reported, of course, in China. The Minnesota Pork CEO, Dave Preisler, has been thinking about what that means to the United States and, of course, watching very closely how that's been playing out in the Chinese pork industry.
The only thing that we do know is it is serious. China has, at least voluntarily, admitted that it's in several different provinces. I don't know that whether it's themselves or anyone else really knows the full extent. Generally, markets will tell you that, and we are seeing some market changes now within China, which probably tells you that it's significant.
Preisler says the disease simply is not contained in China, and that it has already spread to other countries.
Not only China, but also how it spread across other parts of Eastern Europe, and just kind of seen this explosion occur over the last several weeks. And it's really concerning because it's a virus that there is no vaccine for. The death loss is extremely high. We've never seen here in North America this virus, and we certainly want to keep it out.
This issue has boosted the focus in the United States of safety measures that can be put into place. Things like the FMD, that's a different disease, foot and mouth disease vaccine bank, according to Preisler.
A vaccine bank is something that is very much needed with foot and mouth disease. As we look at African swine fever, there is no vaccine for that disease, which is troublesome. But one of the other things that's within that proposal within the Farm Bill is not only looking at dollars for a vaccine bank, but also to really bolster up the capabilities of our veterinary diagnostic labs and our emergency response systems that especially states have. And that's really important because if something bad does happen, you need the capability to be able to address it as quickly as possible and be able to get back to business as normal.
Dave Preisler is the CEO of Minnesota Pork. Now let's switch topics and move to ethanol. Senator Chuck Grassley, who of course has played a key role in the president's E15 decision, says the oil industry is already out with newspaper ads and legal threats against 12-month use of E15.
And they said that before they even seen the final rule. It's almost like they heard Trump say that he was approving a brand new ethanol mandate. That's what they want you to believe. That's not what's happening.
Grassley says the only mandate was to have an oxygenate to replace cancer-causing MTBE more than a decade ago when the oil industry supported the renewable fuel standard, but now resists expanded ethanol use.
They fight the RFS now, but they wanted the RFS back in 2005 because of the problems they had with MTBE. So it's nothing new. If we get E15 on the market 12 months out of the year, there's more options for consumers.
Grassley says the oil industry does not come away empty-handed, even having already gained lower costs for ethanol compliance credits, known as RINs.
I don't think it would be in words, but in spirit, if there is a big increase in RINs, a commitment to take a look at it, to review it, not necessarily to take action, but to review it and be ready to pull a trigger if something's wrong.
But Grassley says E15 and cracking down on RIN price speculation with more transparency should keep RIN prices lower. Meantime, Grassley hopes the EPA will publish a rule by March 1st to give time for public comment and White House Budget Office review and have a final rule in place before next summer's driving season. Well, just when you thought we were going to make it through a news segment without taking up trade, Canada's Prime Minister says the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, allows Canada to move forward with trade talks with China. This despite a provision in the text of the agreement that allows the U.S. to opt out of the deal if Canada or Mexico engages with China. Justin Trudeau claims the provisions were watered down in the final version of the agreement. He told the Globe and Mail this week that he is ready to reopen talks with China. The USMCA replaces the North American Free Trade Agreement, and a clause in the agreement is interpreted to forbid deals with non-market countries such as China. Specifically, the provision specifies that if one of the current NAFTA partners enters a free trade deal with non-market countries such as China, the others can quit in 6 months and form their own bilateral trade pact. However, Trudeau says the clause does not stop Canada from doing business with whom it pleases. Speaking of the USMCA, you've probably already heard this at least once, but as a reminder, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told Bloomberg this week that a vote on the new North American Trade Pact won't happen until next year, given the procedural steps required under Trade Promotion Authority rules. And finally today, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service, otherwise known as APHIS, has deregulated Texas A&M's cotton variety genetically engineered to have ultra-low levels of gossypol in its seeds. Gossypol is a naturally occurring compound in the pigment of cotton plants and protects them from pests and diseases. The genetically engineered variety, according to USDA, maintains protective levels of gossypol in the plants, but the compound is significantly reduced in the seed. This benefits agriculture by lowering cottonseed oil refining cost and potentially expands the use of cottonseed in the livestock and aquaculture feed industries, as well as for human food uses. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now, the price of soybeans rallied out of the October USDA crop production report. This is because it showed fewer acres of the crop would be harvested this season. University of Illinois analyst Todd Hubbs thinks the upside potential is limited.
I don't know if this thing's sustainable. It doesn't feel that way to me. Moving through the rest of the harvest year and toward the start of 2019, I think we're going to need to see some kind of production issues in the South American crop, or if China breaks and doesn't hold out completely on taking U.S. soybeans before we see a sustained upward movement. I think the upside potential is limited.
Limited because even if this year's crop is hurt some by the poor harvest conditions so far, it will remain a record breaker. Right now, USDA has it at 4.7 billion bushels. Now, there are plenty of soybeans in the world. That makes it a buyer's market, and price is going to depend a whole lot upon how many U.S. soybeans can be exported, says Hubbs.
Basically, it doesn't look like other importers are picking up the loss of the Chinese market like we would like them to. When you look at last year and the huge amount of exports that Brazil did in the second half of the marketing year, and even the strength you saw from the U.S. in the latter quarter of our marketing year, you can see that tariff action start to pick up in a lot of forward buying and movement of soybeans. Thus far in this marketing year, we really haven't seen much Chinese movement In the last export inspections, we saw about 5 million bushels go to China, some of that out of Puget Sound, some of that out of New Orleans. But they still seem to be sitting it out, even though when you look at the prices between South American soybeans and U.S. soybeans delivered to China, U.S. soybeans are very competitive.
It all brings Hubs back to the word limited. And he sees the upside price potential in soybeans as limited by an enormous supply in the United States and around the world.
So if you're thinking about marketing some soybeans, I take a good hard look at the price that we're seeing right now, because moving forward, right now, ending stocks are set at 885 million bushels for the 2018-19 marketing year. And barring some kind of uptick in exports from the U.S., that may be in the low end of reasonable projections, depending on what the crop ends up doing here in the U.S.
You can read more from Todd Hubs online on the Farm Doc Daily website. The address there is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Do visit our website as well, though you'll find tickets to our Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the 20th day of November, the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. More information online at farmassetsconference.com. Tickets are just $40. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is now here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's a good, beautiful day where I'm at. I hope it's good over your way.
You know, it is a gorgeous day, and it's just indicative of the improving harvest conditions, I think, across the whole of the Corn Belt. Can you tell me about those?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's very nice in the Western Corn Belt in particular. I think we've got a couple of little disturbances that will move through the Great Lakes region and bring some moisture to parts of the Eastern Midwest periodically as we go forward through the next week. But the Western Corn Belt, where all that excessive rain fell in the first half of this month, it is going to see a drying bias, and that's going to really help get some farmers back into the fields here fairly quickly. We've got low relative humidity. We've got a little bit of wind blowing around. I think the bottom line is that we're going to start firming up that ground after we get some of the surplus moisture out of the way. So certainly by this time next week, I think we'll be doing some pretty aggressive field work again in the West. But only a few areas are probably going to be able to do that for another day or two yet.
And so we're not quite halfway through the crop, or we might be by the time we get to Sunday, but they'll need more time than a week, week and a half that we've been talking about. What about the following week then?
Yeah, you know, I think the following week is still going to be all right. We do have a disturbance that's going to come along in the upper Midwest as we get to that at the latter part of next week, and it will set off some additional rain. Shouldn't be a big deal, but it will be a little bit of a setback in the drying trend. And I'm a little bit concerned about November. I was looking at that outlook here the last few days, and it looks like there is potential that we could go back into a little bit of a wetter biased pattern. So as much as I know everyone already knows, but we need to make as much progress as we can as quickly as we can, because I am a little concerned that we're going to end up with a little more moisture coming back. Nothing like what we saw in the first half of the month, but it's not going to take much moisture to saturate the soil and to create some more delay.
Normally, by the time we get to this time of year, we've stopped talking about Western Europe and Russia, but they had a heck of a drought all season long. And I take it it continues there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's really amazing, this is my 40th year in the business, and I do not ever remember a drought in Europe that began in the spring and was still going on strong in mid-October. And that's what we've got. This is going to be a very interesting winter pattern, because if the pattern doesn't break down here fairly quickly, when we come to spring, we're going to have a real problem on our hands in Europe. And so we're going to have to continue to watch that. I'm pretty sure that we're going to see some relief, but I'm not convinced they're going to see a full restoration of soil moisture. So even though you're right, there's not a lot of crop we have to worry about right in this minute, it is a pattern that is very rare and one that could lead to some interesting problems in 2019. So we'll continue to watch that pretty close.
And finally, how do things look in South America?
Well, certainly in Brazil, everything is just peachy keen right now. There couldn't be a problem if you wanted one out that way. A very well-timed rainfall and periods of sunshine occurring along with seasonal temperatures. Just absolutely ideal for getting into the fields and for germinating crops that have already been planted. But on the other side of the fence in Argentina, there's still a dryness issue in the far west. And I think there's some folks out there a little worried that we're going to see a second year of drought. But that is certainly not going to be the case. We should start seeing timely rain beginning to evolve in western Argentina as early as really tomorrow and off and on through the following week. So we will start to see some improvement there. And by the time we get to the 25th of October, Argentina will also be having some very good weather.
That's Drew Lerner. I'm Todd Gleason.